Welcome to episode 12 of the No Code SaaS podcast with myself, Glenn, Kieran and James. Hi, guys.
Hi, Glenn. Hi, James.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey. Yeah, good, thanks. It's been a little while. We've had a bit of a busy time, I think, all of us. So this is the first time we've been able to get together and do this. And I'm in a slightly different location. I'm in an office. And Kieran, you're in Spain, I believe. So we're kind of a little bit out of our normal zones at the moment.
I'm in a laundry room in an Airbnb in Spain because this is as far away from the kids as I could get.
James, you look like you're in your usual location. You haven't been traveling or anything like that. Are you well?
Yes, yeah, all good. Yeah, no, I've been super busy, but pretty much working from home. And yeah, I've started working from a co-working place as well nearby, which has been really nice, by the sea, so breaking things up a bit.
Nice. I've noticed that since you went full-time on your business, I've noticed more activity going on Twitter and elsewhere. And it's just really great to see that you're obviously just making use of this new time that you've got to just do as much as possible on your business. So is that still going really well? Still happy with that?
Yeah. No, it's been great. I've been kind of churning stuff out really on both features and marketing, trying to get that balance right between the two. And the last kind of month, I've been focusing a bit more on partnerships as well. So there's a few really interesting things happening there that could be really big if they come off. So I've been trying to work through getting all that done really.
Tell us a bit more about that. I think that sounds really exciting. And partnerships is one of those things that I think everybody wants to be able to do. You want to get to that point where you can have partnerships where you feel like you've got enough to offer that partnership and you know, you don't feel almost foolish for approaching somebody because you're not really anywhere yet. So how do you feel? Have you got to that point where you've got that confidence behind you now and you can really go after those kind of partnerships?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's a case of just putting yourself out there, really. I mean, I think, you know, even you know, my app is still the smallest out of compared to all the competitors. You know, they're all like VC funded, like have lots of teams of big people. So compared to them, I'm still quite small, but I don't really try and let that affect me too much when I'm trying to go out there. Because I do think, despite all that, there is a lot to offer the other partners through. I think, and it depends on the partnership with, like, on what kind of company it is, but most of the ones that I've been talking to are fellow Shopify apps, some large, some small, and we're starting off with doing quite simple things like exchanging blog posts, you know, mentioning each other on social media. I've got a couple of webinars coming up where we're going to kind of co-host webinars and do like educational stuff. So yeah, no, I mean, it's been really good, and I've joined a group of other Shopify app founders and people working on Shopify, and we have a call every 2 weeks as well. So really trying to, you know, help each other out and I guess kind of just work together more, because it can be quite isolating working on stuff on your own. So it's been quite good working with other people in the Shopify world.
So these partnerships where no money changes hands, I take it is there a contract or anything like that? Like, is it, how formal is it, and how did you find these partners?
Yeah, it's all pretty informal, really. It will be like exchanging blog posts and things like that. So it's all really done through email. So I'm usually reaching out to people. I'm finding most of them through Twitter, really, to be honest. So it'll be people that I followed on there. And it's just kind of dropping them a DM to say, you know, I think I could do a great blog post for you on this topic, and I think we could get it to the front page in return. Would you do something similar? So actually being quite prescriptive in what you're offering and not just saying, oh, do you fancy partnering? Actually saying, this is the blog, you know, I've done a bit of research. This is the blog post I think could work. This is what I want in return. And so far, I think it's been like 100%. Yes, on everyone I've asked. Eventually, even if they wouldn't do it right there, most people do seem to be kind of up for it, so that's good. And there are a couple of other larger partnerships that I'm working on that are more like with other technology platforms. So they're slightly different, I think. So there's the one kind that's with other apps like me, and then there's the other ones that are more kind of strategic, I think. And they are definitely going to need like NDAs and all that kind of stuff. But a bit more formal.
Okay, and so the idea is that these other apps that are similar to yours, they will say to their customers, or they'll get something in front of their customers that says, check out this other app, which is not a competitor to us. It's kind of a complementary product, and hopefully upsell to their customers, and you'll do the same, making the pie bigger. That's a great idea. I love it. I'm not very down on partnerships. I don't really know how they work, but that sounds really sensible.
Yeah, and it's quite fun as well to share ideas and stuff. So yeah, it's been great.
And where do you put that placement, just out of curiosity, James? So when you're communicating with your customers, obviously you've got emails going out, you've got surveys going out, there are post-survey pages, there's all these different kind of placements opportunities. Can you say at the stage, like how are you actually helping to promote those partners and vice versa?
Yeah, there's a couple of different kind of surfaces, I guess, where you can do the cross promotion. So like there's in the actual app itself, so maybe if you have an integrations page, you'll exchange links on each other's integration pages, which can drive installs and leads in your like customer newsletters. So a couple of times we've mentioned other products in our newsletter where they're kind of complementary. And the main one is really through blog posts. So like trying to write high quality content that's going to rank on Google for, you know, someone who's searching for an app like what's a good post-purchase upsell app or something like that. And then I will partner with another app and review their app and write a blog post about it, basically. And then they would do the same. So that it does seem to work pretty well. So yeah, it's just the time consuming thing is setting up the partnership, really. I think the actual content part of it isn't too bad, but it's usually fairly straightforward type stuff.
And is there a way to measure the effectiveness of this as well, James? Do you have some kind of referral codes or specific pathways where people that sign up, you know, you get to identify them as coming from source A versus B? Or
yeah, I mean, at the moment I've kept it fairly basic with just using UTM URL parameters to track, but there are like proper partnership platforms, and I have looked at a couple for like setting up a proper affiliate scheme, and that is on my list to do a proper affiliate platform to really track it. But yeah, at the moment it's been fairly informal, so I'm just tracking it through like Google Search Console, looking at signups in my app, see where people say they come from, that kind of thing. But yeah, I think it would make sense to have a proper like affiliate tracking platform in there as well.
Mm. And if you still got Mixpanel in the mix, so that could be a help with that.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting things about Mixpanel that have changed over the last few weeks for me anyway, with I imagine we'll probably touch on it at some point, but with all the new bubble pricing. So that's actually made Mixpanel the most expensive part of my app. So I may have to kind of rethink how I'm doing it a bit, but yeah, I'm totally using the data stills, but yeah, I've got to maybe try and think of another way of capturing that in future.
Should we move on to that? Let's do the elephant in the room. Since we last spoke, in fact, it was last week really mostly, wasn't it, that it all blew up, the time that we're recording this. You guys know about this much better than I do, so I'm going to let one of you introduce what happened, but I've got my own comments to make on it. But who wants to actually bring this one up?
James, you go ahead.
Oh, it's such a touchy subject, this. Everyone is so, you know, understandably, everyone was super, super stressed out about it, like me included. I think the way it was handled wasn't ideal. But I guess as a top level summary, we've known Bubble's pricing was going to change for the last year because they tried to implement new pricing that was very much based around records in the database, I seem to remember, was a big part of how they were pricing back then. They went away for a year, spoke to builders on the platform, and I guess did a ton of internal analysis. And then they came out last week with this updated proposal. Well, it wasn't really a proposal. It was like, this is happening. And I think, you know, it was a change towards charging based on usage, really. So moving more towards what a platform like AWS or other, those kind of compute platforms, they charge based on how much you use, like compute-wise, which I think does make sense. I think kind of the problems that arose were from not really clearly explaining how they were coming to the calculations they were coming to. So what is a workload unit, which is their new unit of measurement, wasn't super clear you know, what you were getting. So a lot of people were trying to experiment to try and work out what a workload unit was. And, you know, just for, you know, on that first pass as well, a workload unit was, you know, most apps were using a huge, huge amount of them. And that was the problem. So for doing basic things like an API call to an external service or searching the database or whatever it was, suddenly apps were facing massive, massive bills. So I think my app was like over a 10x increase in the pricing. So that was a bit of a shock for people, I think. And, you know, there was the Bubble forum was crashing. Everyone was going really, you know, it was quite bad, some of the people's reactions to it. You know, I think the founders had threats and all this kind of stuff, which is it's just not, you know, it just shows you, illustrated how highly charged the whole scenario was. Then I think the Bubble team went away and came back with, after about a week, came back with some updated, recalibrated ways of doing this measurement. And for me, at least, it seems to be much more within the world, like realms of reality of what is affordable. I don't think anyone, any builder on Bubble objected to them rising prices. You know, everyone kind of recognized it was very cheap. It's just that it rose to such a degree that it was, you know, it made the platform untenable for a lot of people. So I'm glad that we seem to have now landed on some kind of middle ground, where Bubble are going to be getting enough revenue in to be sustainable and to grow their engineering team and the product, which is what we all want. And everyone who's building on it's going to be able to carry on, hopefully. And, you know, the other thing about this is we've got 18 months. So we've got 18 months on current pricing to do more optimization. But yeah, I don't know, Kieran, is that a fair reflection of it?
Yeah, definitely. That's a good explanation. I mean, I came to it from a slightly different point of view. I think when they first put in place the metrics so you could see how many units you were using, my app was using a crazy amount. I think it must have been at least 30 million a month, which is more than almost anyone I could see. But so my cost was going to go up by almost 100 times, I think. And I had previously thought I was way underpaying for what I'm doing on Bubble. Even though I'm only at like 700 MRR, I just feel like the amount of value I'm getting from the platform is way more than the $29 I was paying. And I knew that there were some massive inefficiencies in my app. There were these, I had a workflow that was running every 5 seconds whenever a user was on any public facing page, which, by the way, I had got that technique from the forum, and some people have said, yeah, this is the best way to like measure how long someone's on a page for. And yeah, obviously it didn't matter, it was working fine, although it was making a mess of my logs. But then as soon as I removed that, my usage like halved in terms of millions of workload units. But and that it was still really high, it was still like 17 million. And then I started to remove a couple of other things, and I was always kind of in support of capacity based pricing because I want them to be more sustainable, and I just felt like I was getting a really good deal before. But then it was only when people started, like all the super brainiacs started doing the number crunching and testing things out and saying, well, actually this is ridiculous because like a simple sign up flow is taking this many units. So I hadn't actually like crunched the numbers myself, and then when I saw that, I was like, okay, this is actually, yeah, it's quite expensive in terms of what we're looking at. And then people were saying, oh, you know, this is going to make Bubble untenable for certain kinds of apps, like B2C, freemium or anything. So yeah, I started to worry quite a lot when I saw things like that. And I know you were really worried about it, but I was still kind of optimistic because they'd given us 18 months, which I felt was like loads of time. And I was sure that I could optimize Yep to, you know, get down to a decent amount. And like, you know, I'm happy to pay $100 or $150 a month, maybe. But I was looking at thousands of dollars a month in at least initially. But I was confident that in 18 months, I could either get my revenue up or bring my workload units down and optimize the app. But yeah, now thankfully they've done the recalculation after listening to the community, and things are looking much, much better. I mean, my workload units now are, I think if they continue as they have been the last few days, is, you know, I'm going to be paying maybe $100 to $150 a month, which is fine, and that's going to kick in 18 months. So, you know, if I'm not at double my MRR in 18 months, then I'm going to be feeling quite depressed. So I think it's good. But yeah, in terms of the wider ecosystem, I understand that for some people, it's going to change what Bubble is to them. It means you have to think differently when you're developing. You have to factor in more things. You can't just blindly go out there and say, oh, I'm just going to put in like recursive workflows and do this every 5 minutes every day. But, you know, I think we were kind of not living in the real world when we were able to do that. We were playing around in a sandbox environment when really in the real world, you do have to consider things like that. So ultimately, I think it will make us all better developers. I agree that there's not a lot of transparency about how the workload units are calculated. And for me, that doesn't really matter. I feel like in a different kind of platform or market, that wouldn't matter so much. But because, you know, programmers, developers are by their nature curious and very detail focused, people really want to understand exactly how they're figured out. So yeah, I'm in general in support of what they're doing, but I agree. It's crazy that they spent that long thinking about it, then launched it, and then within a couple of weeks had like reduced the calculations by at least 10 times. But I'm very glad that they did listen and that they're kind of humble enough to take on board the feedback and go back. And they must have had a hellish couple of weeks just trying to figure all that out and then come out with a calculation, which now I'm hoping they're not going to mess around with too much more, because if they then reverse that and go back up, then, you know, all the people who said they were going to walk probably will walk, which would be very sad.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think over the last week, they have released a bit more information about how the workflow units are calculated, specific things, and you can see it in the logs as well. So, you know, for every workflow that's run, you can see what it's actually cost in units, and that's been quite helpful to me. One thing I'd been working on anyway, aside from this whole pricing thing, was moving a certain part of my database out of Bubble, and that was for performance reasons, because there's one table that I have, you know, when customers respond to a survey, that table is gigantic, and it's actually worked out, you know, quite well. And I think more and more people may do that, is if there are certain parts of your app that are very resource intensive, it can make sense now to have them outside Bubble. So I've got my database in Tinybird, and that, you know, as I manage to transition that totally, that's going to make the app a lot more affordable to run. So kind of little hacks like that as well, about, you know, picking when to use Bubble and when to use third party services for certain things, is going to become more common, I think, you know, for apps that do kind of get a lot of usage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really confident that I can make a lot more savings, because I know, for example, I've got loads of workflows that run on page load that don't need to. I create a user session in the database, a new row in the table every time someone lands on a public facing page. I could track that in alternate ways. I'm looking at, you know, how to do it with Google Analytics, which I think would just run with a bit of JavaScript, so you wouldn't need to do any workflows at all, and then I can feed that back to the user to say how many people have visited their page. So that would surely halve or more than halve the number of workflows that my app is using. So I'm confident I can get it down a lot lower than it already is, and it's already, you know, not too bad, I think.
Mm-hmm. So one question I've got is, where's the opportunity here? Because I have seen people talking about doing optimization courses and, you know, just best practices. Well, this does sound like an opportunity for everybody to level up in order to save money. Have you seen anything interesting out there that is either going to be interesting to our Bubble listeners or even just in general in the no-code community, where we're like, okay, so these things happen, times change, systems change, companies change. What can you do to actually be on the positive side of that rather than just the negative side, you know?
I've seen a lot of sarcastic comments about how there's going to be loads of optimization gurus and courses coming out, which put me off wanting to do one. But, you know, James somehow already came out with an amazing email where he talks about how he's optimizing his app and loads of good suggestions for using these third-party databases and things like that. So, yeah, I think there will be just a slightly different focus. And I'm halfway through recording, you know, a Bubble course zero to pro bubble course, and I paused it to stop and think about how I'm going to teach it, because actually I'm probably going to have to change the way I teach some of the things. But yeah, I don't want to become an optimization guru just yet, because I don't think anyone really understands how to do it yet. But I'm sure that, yeah, in the long run, the way we teach bubble and the way beginners learn how to do things is going to change, because they're going to have to think a bit differently. But I still think that if the pricing continues as it is, as I've been seeing in my own app, I think for real beginners, you're not actually going to have to change the way you do things too much. You can still afford to make the same mistakes that a lot of beginners do, and you'll be fine until you get to, you know, quite a heavy load of usage.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, I think it's that we're having to think more about doing things in an efficient way. I think the bubble's been very forgiving about things being kind of inefficient, but that's definitely got to be something that we think about more now. And I think at the moment, no one is still an optimization expert on bubble yet. Still, I think everyone's still figuring it out. It's all very new, but I think it's in general, it's quite a good thing to think about, is your apps being as efficient as possible and having as less logic as possible as well, because it makes them easier to maintain as well. I mean, this is something that every other coded startup has had to deal with forever. And I've worked at startups that have had AWS bills of like hundreds of thousands a month. So, you know, from things being inefficient. So there's definitely, you know, it's not a bad thing that we're being pushed to be more, you know, more efficient in the way we build things. It's just that it's going to take time for everyone to work it out, you know, me included. And I think it is just great we have got this 18 months kind of leeway as well to do it. Because I do think, especially with these adjustments that have been made, everyone should be able to make changes to get their app to a good place within 18 months, I think, you know, where it's still affordable. And I do still think that Bubble will help out with people if they are struggling with that. They've said they will, like, on a case-by-case basis, do that. So while it was a horrible thing to go through, and I was definitely freaking out and thinking I'm going to have to completely refactor my whole app now, I'm less panicked about it. I think the worst thing to come out of all of this is just the damage to the Bubble brand and the community around it is, I don't think, is going to be swept under the carpet that quickly. There's a level of trust that's going to have to be bought back. You know, this was handled from a PR perspective quite awfully, I think. None of this had to happen. Like, none of this fallout had to happen at all. So I think that's, you know, looking at all of this, that is the worst thing to come out of it, you know. And I hope people do still give Bubble another chance and give it a go, because it is a fantastic platform, and, you know, all startups make mistakes, we all do. And I think they've come out and put things right. So hopefully we can kind of move on and go from there.
But I think it just goes to show how difficult it is to do something like this, because they tried once before, they learned from that, they had, you know, over a year to think about it again. They consulted with a lot of people in the community. They seemed to be doing everything right, and they still messed it up, which I don't think is reflective of the Bubble team necessarily. I think it is just very difficult to make a pricing change like this when you have such a strong community and not mess up in some way. So yeah, it's just so tough, and I do hope they're able to get that trust back. But obviously, you know, it's going to take a bit of time, because I think quite a lot of the serious, even the fanboys and girls, were quite negatively affected by it.
Definitely. And I think a large reason for that, you know, is when a lot of other services change their pricing, like even AWS or whatever, you can still a lot of the time move to GCP or some other platform. When we're, you know, us built on Bubble, there is no way we can move, like, easily. Like, there is no export code function. Like, you are on the hook here. So I think you know, that is the reason there was probably such a visceral reaction. You know, everyone's invested hours and hours and hours building this stuff that they are then, you can't move that anywhere. That's it. So I think that was an element of it. And, you know, I think if it does make people think, you know, can I de-risk my app a bit through having certain bits on other platforms, or, you know, blending things together a bit more. Is that a good thing to do? That's certainly something I'm going to be thinking about more now. And it's just, you know, a good practice in general, I think. But yeah, hopefully they can, you know, the community kind of repairs itself and we can move on from all this, really.
I have read how people are trying to figure out where they would go if they were to jump ship. And there's been a lot of talk of Flutterflow as being the alternative, which I was surprised about. I didn't really think of Flutterflow like that. It's like a bubble alternative, you know. The closest I can think of is something like Builder, which is that all-in-one product that can do pretty much anything. So that was the equipment. Nobody's really talked about Builder. So what? Yeah, I was just curious about that. Why do you think people were saying Flutterflow? Was it literally because they couldn't think of another platform that could possibly do what Bubble could do, and therefore that was the closest match? Or I just thought that was a strange one. Just your thoughts on that?
Well, I've heard a lot of good things about Flutterflow recently. So I did actually have a look at it in the midst of all the turmoil and started playing around with it. But it seemed really mobile app focused, which is not really my focus at all, although you can build for web on it. So I started looking at WeWeb and Xano, which a lot of people had mentioned as well. And that seemed good because you can export your code. I'm not sure why Builder wasn't really the go-to, because you're right, it is a complete solution. It's been a few years since I tried it out, and I thought it was enormously powerful back then. But I didn't see any kind of attempts from Builder to get people to move over, which I think is maybe quite admirable and classy that they didn't. But yeah, I was surprised there weren't more people who were saying, come over to Builder. I just saw a lot of people saying WeWeb and Flutterflow for some reason.
I don't know whether you saw WeWeb's pricing changes, where they actually brought their prices down so that the indie maker could be more aligned with that kind of pricing structure. But they didn't mention Bubble at all in any of that rejig. And I thought that, again, that was quite classy. They weren't actually saying, hey, everybody, and everybody's panicking, we're over here, we even dropped the prices for it. They just kind of did it a bit subtly. So hats off to WeWeb for that. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting, as you say, 18 months. And this conversation is just going to go on forever, isn't it? So I think we could probably leave it there for now. So, Kieran, what about a quick update from you, apart from the Bubble pricing stuff? Anything else going on in your world that you would like everybody to know about?
Yeah, well, the biggest update and the most interesting one is that finally, after over a year, I increased my prices on Yep. And I tweeted about that. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to increase them and see what happens. And I tweeted about it. I said, I'm going to put them up from $10 a month to $15 a month. And then someone said, well, if you're putting up to 15, you might as well put it up to 19, because, you know, psychologically, there's not much difference between the two. And so I was like, yeah, okay. So I just did it. I just put it up to $19 a month. And then I had a sign up within, like, a conversion within a couple of hours of doing that, which was totally unexpected, because I get, you know, maybe two or three a week. And I got one within a few hours of putting the price almost to double what it was before. And then since then, I think I've had maybe two more. That was only about a week ago. So yeah. So it doesn't seem to have slowed things down. Obviously, amount of data is very small, but yeah, pleasantly surprised that, because I really expected that just no one would ever sign up and pay again. And yeah, they have. So that's, you know, a really big difference, because even if, you know, one person churns, but then I've got two persons worth coming in as a new sign up. And yeah, I think it's hopefully going to lead to maybe some more price increases and me just having a bit more confidence in the product. And, you know, as they say, you might get a different type of customer who values it a bit more. And there was an interesting tweet from Jason Cohen about pricing, where he said, you know, if you're pricing your product at $10 a month, people are going to still expect to have you on the end of the phone because they're paying for it, but they're only paying you $10 a month. And that the expectation will be the same if they're paying you $100 or $1,000, but they're only paying you $10. Whereas if it's free, people understand that you're not going to necessarily respond to them. But if they pay $10, they expect to have access to support. So you may as well charge more than $10. So I finally took that on board. And yeah, it was scary to do, but it seems to be going all right. And I'll report back next time on if signups have totally dried up again.
Well, that's great to hear, because I'm always telling you to put your prices up. I think you undervalue.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't listen.
No, I know. No, it's great. No skin off my nose. But it's interesting that you're doing it, that you're having a good result so far. And I think that it's a message to all of us, when we're thinking about pricing and money and value and worth, especially self-worth, because it's coming from us, right? Us as makers, as people. It's difficult sometimes to just ask for that and feel like you can do that. But James, you put your prices up fairly recently. You found exactly the same. People are quite happy to pay it. It's almost like if people are paying less, not many people are going to come towards you and go, do you know what? You should be charging me twice this. I'd be happy to pay it. You know, even though they would, because people just don't do that. You know, they get whatever you can get away with paying. That's psychologically what you're going to do, at least in the West. But you only find out by experimentation. And I think, you know, Bubble have had their go at it, really didn't handle it well, but, you know, they're doing it on a much larger scale. And we owe it to ourselves and our families and the whole ecosystem to do the same and actually find out what that comfortable price point is for our customers. And with the amount of value that you actually provide in your applications anyway, Kieran, if you mapped features to pricing, it's easy to justify. Absolutely. $19, easy to justify. Whereas there are other apps that are maybe, you know, micro SaaS based, and there's just one or two kind of key features, and they could be charging the same, if not even more than that, and people will still pay it. You know, so I think we do have to take that step, be confident, put our faith in ourselves and in our product, and that shines through them. I think our customers pick up on that. They can see that we're fully behind our products and we believe in it, you know. So I think that's an important lesson for us there. You got anything to add to that, James?
Yeah, no, I think it's that age-old thing of just charge more. I didn't have any problems when I increased my pricing either, but I know we all really worry about doing it. The only other thing that is on my list that I'm going to be changing about pricing is being much more strict about what is on the free plan. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we do need to operate profitably, and, you know, having very, very generous free plans, you know, it doesn't work financially always for us. So it's definitely, you could be thinking about my free plan much more as a way of trying the product rather than, you know, having lots of usage going through it. You know, I think all these recent bubble pricing changes have made those kind of thoughts come into a lot of people's heads as well, you know. If you do have a free plan at all, then it's, you know, it's got to be, you've got to think about what it's costing you to provide that and put limits on it and stuff.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's the one positive thing about the pricing changes that, or the bubble pricing changes, that I think it has put more pressure on us as makers to charge more for what we're doing, add more value, and to think more from a business point of view rather than, oh, I'm only paying $29 a month for this, so I can, you know, let loads of people use it for free. Well, you know, that's great and it's fun, but if we do want to actually make something of it, I think this has forced us to think a bit more shrewdly about the value we're providing for our users.
I'm sure Emmanuel Bubble will be really pleased to hear you say that, Kieran, you know, backing up their decision. So we're going to have to call it short today. I'm afraid this is just a short one anyway, as we said at the beginning to ourselves. But is there anything else burning that we just want to cover for our final piece before we sign off?
Do you have any updates, Glenn, that you'd like to share?
I'm working on something new. I could tell you that. There's a, what can I tell you at this stage?
Does it have AI in it?
No.
What?
It doesn't. No. And don't get me wrong. I think everything going on in AI is extremely exciting and it will feature at some point in what I'm doing. But now I'm actually making use of a marketplace that's going to be emerging basically in our space. And it's a brand new marketplace. And it's something that I've not really done before, create products for a marketplace. So this is kind of crucial for my big plans. Because it's still educational, it's not just purchasing a product, there's actually education attached to it as well. So I'm really keen on that. I'll tell you more when I can, but I'm working on it over the next couple of weeks, hopefully have something launched by the beginning of May. that's the plan at the moment. I think it's really exciting because it's something that is really scalable. You know, it's not necessarily a SaaS product. It's you know, courses, it's resources that can actually be sold multiple times. So it's a really real digital product like that. But it's not just scalable from within one product point of view, but you can create multiples of these. You know, if you imagine something like, say, templates that you can buy for Bubble or something like that, it's similar to that. You've got this opportunity to actually produce it once, sell it many times, and actually just keep producing more and more and more of them as times change, as things change. So as new technologies come out, like ChatGPT, you can actually bring that in to this kind of approach and actually help people use that technology, learn it more quickly perhaps, and if they're learning it by themselves, and then actually make use of it in their own development work. So that's what I'm working on right now. Really excited. I started it when I was on holiday last week. So it's really nice just to be sitting. It was in the mountains and I had a beautiful view and I was just sitting there thinking aspirationally and then started to write out this whole master plan. So yeah, that's what I'm working on at the moment. I'll tell you more in due course.
Excellent. Sounds really exciting. Mm.
And just by the way, I heard that you said on Twitter that you were launching something new. Are you going ahead with that? Do you want to talk about that quickly?
Yeah, the last few weeks I've just been playing around a lot with ChatGPT and Bubble because it's so easy to do stuff. And I've made a couple of really nice little MVP products. One of them was a form builder where you just type in, I want a form to assess interview candidates for XYZ, and it would generate like a 10 question form with like multiple choice questions and long answer questions and stuff really quickly. And the other one is I wanted to do a website builder but aimed at more general small businesses where the owners aren't technical enough to use something like Squarespace or WordPress, but they still kind of need a website. And so I've made this thing where you just talk to it, tell it about your business, and it transcribes what you've said, and then ChatGPT makes a website for you, and then it spits it out like a Yelp page, but on a different domain, and that's it. And it's just so easy, and it's one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, but does anyone need that? But when you try it, you think, oh, actually, this is really cool. And so I am going to launch it. I don't know if people do need it. Certainly it's not going to be targeted at your average Twitter user or indie maker, but maybe they could show it to, you know, their parents who run a business and say, try this out. And it is just beautifully easy because you don't have to even think of a good pitch for your business. You can literally waffle for 5 minutes, not saying anything that makes sense, and ChatGPT will write some professional copy that is totally relevant to everything that you've tried to say. So yeah, it's really good. So yeah, I'm definitely going to launch it, but I don't know if it'll go anywhere, but you may as well try.
Absolutely. Have you had any time to play around with those kinds of apps, James?
Yeah. I mean, I think like everyone, I've been experimenting with ChatGPT. I think since we last spoke, I put into the product basically a ChatGPT assistant that will write survey questions for brands. So if you sign up and you're a beauty brand and you're called Beauty Direct or whatever, it'll write questions specifically for you. And I'm going to publish today or tomorrow. I've integrated that in the sign up flow and it seems to be making a massive difference. So like a customer installs the app, they come through and they have everything is set up and they've got a ton of questions written for them without them having to do anything. And it does seem to have been, you know, the first few customers have used it, it looks really good. So yeah, there's so much potential for doing these kind of ChatGPT powered things. And that was using the plugin from Minimum Studio as well. So I think that might be another topic to dive into at some point, because it lets you generate all sorts of things in ChatGPT that are more dynamic than just a sentence. So it's pretty cool what you can do with it. So yeah, no, all looking good.
Great, thank you. Yeah, I think next time let's dive a bit more into some of these features and the benefits that they can have for our customers and our businesses. You know, as you know, I come from an educational point of view. You're building these features into your products. So we've got two different kind of angles that we're coming out with this. And it's universal now. It's not, genie can't be put back in the bottle. It's not going anywhere apart from just bigger and better. There are lots of people saying how scared they are about this, the prospect of this whole thing and artificial general intelligence, AGI. And yeah, I'm just really fascinated by where this is all going to go. I think by the end of the year, even, we're going to be in a very different place to where we are now in April. So that's just incredible to think. You know, we're used to technology moving fast, but not this fast. I mean, our human brains just can't keep up with the amount of change that's happening now. So we're definitely on the exponential curve, the very sharp rise of that exponential curve. So yeah, we'll be touching on this lots and lots over the next few episodes, I'm sure. So thank you for the shorter episode today, guys. Sorry I have to cut it a bit short, but we'll do another one sooner than we did this last time. We won't leave it so long next time, okay?
Yeah, cool. Sounds good.
Chat to you next week.
Cheers. Bye.
Cheers, bye everyone.